Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Michelle Kay.
Well, and also it's like, nobody's going to run it for you. Like, as much as you can read up on it or learn about things, it's like, you still have to actually try it. And I think that is another thing that I would really emphasize, like the courage to just try something. You know, try and go for that run around the block, or try and switch up your run tactics or your strategies, right? Like, you won't really know if it'll work for you unless you actually try it.
On this episode of The Rundown, I had a great chat with plant-based ultra-endurance athlete Robbie Ballinger. Simply put, Robbie loves to run and pushes limits. He's conquered the run across America in just 75 days. And most recently crushed the record for loops around Central Park in 24 hours. His accomplishments are remarkable, but the message he carries around making better food choices and how that affects climate change is just as impressive. This episode is brought to you by VeloFix. As runners, there's not much to worry about in terms of equipment maintenance or tune-ups. But for those cyclists and triathletes out there, and speaking from my own experience, finding a bike shop with efficient customer-facing mechanics can be a challenge. Well, now it's time to change gears with VeloFix. With easy online booking, VeloFix sends a maintenance van straight to your door and provides same-day service with a smile. Head to VeloFix.com and use promo code LARUNDOWN15 for 15% off your tune-up. And if you happen to be looking for a bike mechanic gig, VeloFix is looking to expand their fleet in Quebec. Check out VeloFix.com to apply. In this week's news, former guest and fellow podcast host Chris Chavez faced off against Malcolm Gladwell in the mile. It was touted to be the matchup of the century, and believe me, it certainly lived up to the hype. Chavez came out strong and led most of the race, but Gladwell showed his experience, sitting back, racing patiently, and finished strong as he surged past Chavez in the last lap. This event was unique and fun, getting the attention of many people in the running world. Even the likes of Rich Roll followed along and mentioned it in his famous podcast too. It's great for the spirit and great for the sport. Please check it out if you haven't already. These events are entertaining, exciting, and really next level. In other racing news, as regulations for COVID seem to be loosening, so are the plans for in-person racing at major events. The latest is UTMB, as they are planning to proceed with their event in August. Incredible sign of things to come, and hopefully there are more announcements like it soon. Make sure to check the show notes for links to information about these events, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. As a vegan athlete, I get a lot of questions from friends, family, coworkers about what I eat and how I eat for all the activities that I do. Which is why I'm really excited to have this next guest on. He's a plant-based ultra-endurance athlete who has completed some pretty remarkable things, including running across the U.S. from L.A. to New York City, and also set a record for most consecutive loops in the famous Central Park, all while being a plant-based athlete. So I can't wait to pick his brain, and without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show Robbie Ballinger.
Hey, Justin. It's nice to be on here with you.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time for us today. And I'm excited to share your story with some. I know we have some ultra listeners, and I've dabbled a little bit in the past, but kind of sticking to the marathon. So I know they'll be excited to hear what you have to say.
Awesome.
So how are things where you are right now, Robbie?
Things here are good. You know, as far as COVID, things have settled down a little bit. Most of my little circle has all gotten vaccinated. So, you know, we're kind of getting to see each other, get out a little bit. And I'm in Denver, Colorado. So the weather's kind of turning, no more snow. It's been pretty nice. Been able to get out and get some good runs in. Actually made it into the mountains just a couple days ago for the first time. And still a little bit of snow, but was able to play around a little bit.
And has it affected your training at all with everything being closed? And I don't know if you participate in races as well, or if you take on more of these bigger challenges that you set up for yourself.
Yeah, you know, the past year definitely put a damper on things a little bit. As far as my training, luckily here in Denver, there was never like a mandate to actually stay in your house. Like we were like, you know, we could be outside. So I was getting to run as much as I wanted to. And then some, really, it opened up a lot of extra time. So yeah, the running went really well the past year. As far as cross training, any time in the gym, it wasn't something I did a lot, but I was actually just getting into it as COVID hit. So that kind of, again, just became something that I don't do really. I just run all the time. But yeah, I'm still able to get after it. And as far as races, yeah, last year was quite quiet. I did participate in a couple virtual events. I ran 24 hours with a friend who was in the UK just to kind of do it in solidarity and see what we could get in. And then I think another virtual race on New Year's Eve. But otherwise, just kind of kept to myself and ran some miles.
Okay. And did you find that challenging for you in your training, not having a specific goal in mind, or was it something that you could take advantage of in a different way?
I think as far as training wise, you know, I run by myself most of the time or with my fiance, and, you know, we could still do that. So that didn't change much. It was definitely hard to keep motivation at times, and at times I didn't, you know, there was definitely some lulls in there over the past year and a half, but, excited now that things are opening up a little bit. I was able to go to New York and do that big effort, and looking forward to this summer with more efforts on the calendar.
Mm. And are you working as well, or is this something you're doing?
I'm kind of right now in transition. I was working for a friend's company that I'm still really proud and proud to have been a part of. It's called Let Us Grow. It's a home hydroponic farm stand, so it allows you to grow all your produce in your house. It's super cool. I was doing that for the last year and a half during COVID, but recently started turning the wheels again and getting back to being a full-time sponsored athlete. So that's where I'm at right now. Actually, as of this week, I'm back to full-time running.
Oh, that's great. So you must be super pumped about that.
Yeah, I am. It's you know, it's definitely my passion. It's what I love to do. And when you can align those things, you know, your passions with what you have to do every day, it makes it a lot easier to get up in the morning. And yeah, I'm super stoked.
For sure. I guess my question for you is, did you ever think that that was going to be what you would do as a living?
No. Not until March 15th, 2018 was the first time I actually thought, okay, I'm going to try to make this happen. Prior to that, absolutely not. My life had many chapters up until probably 2 years before becoming a sponsored athlete. Did I ever even consider thinking that, you know, I would make money through athletics? But here I am.
And it's pretty hard to do. In my understanding, is like it's not a simple task for a runner to make a living that way. You know,
it's not. It takes a lot of hustling, and it definitely takes a lot of creativity.
For sure. Well, I want to talk about your journey and kind of what brought you to this point, and kind of what your progression looked like, but. What was it like growing up for you as a kid, and were you athletic and any interest in running back then?
Yeah, as a kid, I was in team sports, you know, very traditional American sports. I played baseball, basketball, football, golf, things of that nature. Running was something that, you know, was required for many of those sports, but it was nothing that I ever focused on as the focus, as the singular thing. That came much later in life, in my late 20s.
Okay. And do you remember... Where was there like a specific connection to running when you did finally find it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For me, it was a situation where I grew up, my early adulthood was all spent working in restaurants and bars. I around age 28, I believe it was, I was running and part owner in two Neapolitan pizzerias in Austin, Texas. And coming from a background in the service restaurant industry, it's definitely a culture of work hard and then party just a little bit harder. So I was doing really good at that, but that wasn't really adding up to me being the best I could be to take on the responsibilities of these establishments that I was running. So my girlfriend at the time, is now my fiance, she had come from a family of runners. Her father was a marathoner. She had done a marathon and a handful of halves. She invited me out on a run. So we went out, I made it 2.5 miles. And that was all I had in me for the day. but it definitely stuck. It was something I really, really enjoyed. I found that it was going to lend itself to making me more accountable so that I would have something to look forward to get up to go do before going into work instead of just staying at the bars all night and then waking up just in time to go run the restaurant again. So yeah, it was a quick evolution at that point. It went from a 2.5 mile run to a half marathon, I think 2 or 3 months later, a marathon 8 months later, and then I started dabbling in ultras the following year.
Wow, that's incredible. So what were some like early challenges for you, like going from, you know, a really shorter, much shorter distance to then, you know, the half marathon, like why did you want to do more of that?
Yeah. Challenges wise, like I think it was just like learning like the tricks of the trade, like simple things that just, I was not aware of, like hydrating. I lived in Austin, Texas at the time. It was super hot. And I remember I went out for like a 10 mile run and got back and was talking to, my fiance's father, and something I said led him to the realization that I wasn't running with water. And he's like, "Are you not drinking any water during that?" And I was like, no. And he's like, you should probably start doing that. So it was just like things like that, just learning what it really means to run long distance and to do it sustainably. For me, a big like epiphany was that on that first run was my fiance was like, "Hey man, you might want to slow down a little bit. Like you're sprinting. You're not going to be able to do that for miles on end." And I was like, Oh, okay. So if I just slow it down a little bit, I can go further, you know, like definitely like that's something that we all understand. But at the time I definitely was oblivious to it.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people, when they start running, they're so pace oriented, especially at the beginning, to see like, "Oh, how fast am I going?" Or, "I can't keep up with that pace," or, "I want to go to this, I want to get to this pace," or, you know, with comparisons and all that. I don't know if that was present when you started, but.
You know, once I started running, or like once I realized that pace, if I'd slow it down, I could go further. I got real obsessed with the further part. I never stopped and really focused on a fast marathon or anything. Like I still haven't ran like what most would consider like a really fast marathon. I just kept wanting to see how far I could go. And that really became my focus. And I think that's why I've been able to run sustainably for the last 8 years without incurring much energy in injury.
Yeah, which is really key, right, for those kind of things. Is there anything that you look back on that you say, you know, that makes sense for why you are an ultra athlete today? Like, I always wonder about that. Like, I played soccer and I like playing midfield, for example, and it involved a lot of running. So distance running now makes sense, you know, or it makes sense. But was there anything that stands out to you? Like, "Oh yeah, this is where I was going to end up like all along. Like, this is why I have a knack for the endurance."
You know, what's funny is when I was really young, like, you know, playing team sports, or I guess not really young, even into high school, I remember like my friends cutting on me a lot giving me a hard time because I would run on my toes. Like I had a very interesting gait. In fact, I remember being called Forrest at one point, like, or Forrest Gump. And now it's like the joke's on them, I guess. But in that, I think, you know, I think what I now see is, yeah, I had really good biomechanics for running. And then after reading Born to Run, that book was really big for me. And hearing how the Tata Mara ran and how they took short, choppy steps and they have, you know, really good posture and those things. And that's just something I've always done naturally. So reading that book, I was like, "Oh, okay. I just kind of intuitively was doing this in a way that was going to, you know, lend itself to me being a sustainable runner."
Mm. So were you going to school as well, at, you know, working, going to school and training? Was that kind of?
No. Like school for me, I went to University of Auburn as a freshman, which is in Alabama. And then I kind of just didn't really get into it. I wasn't a big fan. So I ended up moving up to Alaska. And I lived up there for a long summer and then was in the Virgin Islands for a couple of years. And then I found myself in Austin, Texas. And that's where I really got serious about like fine dining, like really like more serious, interesting food. And so that was really my focus. So it was more along the lines of running businesses, running restaurants, working long hours, and then finding the time to run in there as well. And yeah, that was kind of more where the challenge was for me, is budgeting the time out at work.
Mm. So why food then? So where was this passion for food and how did that come about?
I grew up, you know, I remember my grandfather, my mother's father was he was like very worldly. I grew up in rural Georgia, but I had like this grandfather who traveled the world a lot, and he would always come back and he loved to cook, and I would always be in the kitchen with him. And I think that's where it started. And then it just, you know, it became a mode of how I could travel and live at the same time. Like I found a job up in Alaska that was like at a buffet turn and burn restaurant. So I moved up there to do that. And then when I moved to the Virgin Islands, I was working at a bar restaurant. And so somewhere in there, it just became a way to make good money, but know that I would always be agile and mobile. I could always pick up and go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But then when I made it to Austin, did I start to understand that, yeah, there were more layers to it. There was a lot of interesting things that you could learn about culture and society through the foods that we eat, and seeing chefs bringing in different, you know, different inspiration from different places they had been. That was really interesting to me. I never was in the kitchen. I focused more on front of the house and had a big like knowledge of wine. And you know, that was really where my focus was on the hospitality side of it.
Okay. And at that time, what was your diet like? What kind of food did you enjoy?
Everything and anything. You know, I mean, I was running pizzerias. There was lots of mozzarella, lots of salami, you name it. Whatever it was, I was into it. I didn't really ever think that there was anything from that was going to really affect me negatively. That was much later, as my running started to take off, did I realize the cleaner my diet got, the higher I could perform. So yeah, it was really just an everyday average American diet. Luckily it was all full of like really high quality food, because I was eating at these restaurants that were really nice restaurants. So, you know, making sure that everything was farm to table. The meat I was eating was all grass fed and from local or, you know, small producers. But yeah, that was where I was at the time.
Okay. So that already is a pretty good start from a food aspect, even if you're not like a plant-based eater or vegan, or, you know, having this farm to table idea, that's already a better place than most, I'd say, for where your food comes from. How did your diet evolve through the running and everything, like through recovery, to become a plant-based? Because, you know, you're eating well, you're eating foods that are produced the right way. So how did that kind of look?
Yeah, so for me, the evolution of kind of finding a plant-based diet was I was running these restaurants, and it was very rewarding, really fulfilling time in my life. But there did come a point where the stresses and the amount of hours it took to do the job just caught up to me, and I got a little overwhelmed. And I eventually went to my business partners and I sold my shares in the restaurants and pulled myself out of kind of the management side of it. And at that time, my fiance and I moved up to Austin, from Austin to Denver, Colorado, for her to go to nursing school. So I had this kind of this time. I consciously took some time off of work to decide what I wanted to do next. And in there, it was also that I wasn't working in a restaurant. It was the first time that I had full control over what I was going to eat. And about that time, I read Scott Jurek's book, Eat Run, and seeing this literally high perform runner who was, you know, gave a lot of his success to his diet, I was like, well, maybe I'll give that a try. And it wasn't like I went full plant-based vegan overnight. Just started to eliminate some things and add some other things, and noticed that with that, I just didn't have as much soreness. That was the first thing I really noticed, was I could get up every day and I could go for another run without having to, like, you know, hobble around the house first for an hour. And that to me was profound, because as a runner, or in any sport, I would say, you know, it's like, it's all about repetition, like put in the work, recover, and then do it again. And the more often and the higher frequency and intensity you can do that, the stronger you'll become. So that was where kind of the evolution to a full plant-based diet started.
Mm. So you were running at that point a lot, in other words.
Yeah. So like, as I was running the restaurants, I had done my first 50 miler. I'd done a couple other, you know, 50Ks and marathons and such. And then when I left the restaurants, it opened up a lot of time. You know, that's this big thing that we need to, you know, as ultra runners, it just takes time. And so, yeah, not having a job, I was taking the time. I was processing the past experiences of my life and also trying to decide what I wanted to do next through running. So I was just every day getting up and running 10 to 20 miles. And yeah, in that was, it also allowed me to explore the food choices, and they kind of came together as this thing of like, oh, wow, this is profoundly good for me. And I was also at the time really really searching for a way to have an impact on climate change. I was thinking in my next job, I might get into solar, or I might do something like wildland firefighting to help mitigate the damages of climate change. And then finding this diet, really getting into running. And all of a sudden I was like, wow, this is really the things that I'm passionate about. How can I combine those and find a way to do that professionally? And that was where the idea of running across the United States came in.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, it's like following a passion, and that leads to all these other things, which I love, because I find having more and more of these conversations that that's kind of how it goes. And it's like the driver's running, which is really crazy. But also like a wonderful process. So now I'm curious, where was the wake up call with the climate change stuff? And so now you have an awakening with the running, an awakening with the diet. And now it's like, that's all leading you to this climate change.
Yeah. So the climate change kind of happened in there at the same time as well. When I left the restaurants, I had this opportunity, you know, this time on my hands. And at first I thought I'd go travel abroad for a while. I was thinking about going to either Southeast Asia or South America for a while. It just so happened that right at that same time, Hurricane Maria and Irma that hit the Caribbean came through and just decimated the town I had lived in the Caribbean. It was a small community called Coral Bay on St. John in the U.S. Virgin Islands. I still had a lot of friends and people I loved down there. So instead of taking this trip abroad and just to kind of gallivant around, I decided to go down there and help with the relief effort. So I arrived on the island about a month and a half after the storms hit and realized that just the gravity and the size of these storms seemed abnormal, you know, and I think everything pointed to that was most likely due to climate change, it's due to the oceans warming. And that hit me really hard. I'd spent, you know, up until that point, I'd spent my whole adult life just like imbibing, just like being amongst like a lot of fun, gluttonous times. And I don't regret that at all. But I at that moment was just like, look, like Mother Nature's pissed. And I haven't really done much to address that as an individual. So there's got to be a way I can help. And so that was when I came back from, I was down there for about a month. And when I came back, I'm got a clean slate. I don't have a job. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to find a way to make something to do with environmentalism a part of what I do next. And then that was where the food came in and all these things started kind of combining together.
Mm-hmm. So what was next? What was the plan?
Yeah. So from there, it was, you know, that was when I there was a couple months there where I was mulling it over while I was running here in Denver. I ended up going down to Mexico and running the Caballo Blanco 50, made famous by the book Born to Run that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I got to run with the Tarahumara Indians. While I was down there, I met a guy named Patrick Sweeney. Patrick, just in passing, said that he ran across the United States in 2015. And that just kind of stopped me in my tracks. So I was like, whoa, I didn't know people really did that. And so when I got home, I started digging deeper to find not a lot of people do that. You know, I ended up being around the 330th person that's ever done it. First guy did it in 1909. But the wow factor of it to me seemed very powerful. So I was like, I was on a run. It was my first run when I got back to Denver from that trip to Mexico. And I was like, okay, I want to do something environmentalism. I found this plant-based diet that I know is really good for me. And I know it's really good for the environment. And I really like to run, and the plant-based stuff really affects my running well. Oh, wow. Let me just combine all these things. I just met this guy who ran across the United States. So I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do it to create conversations about better food choices and show what's possible in a plant-based diet. And so I was like, okay, this hits everything. I get to stay in food. I get to focus on something that can help environmentalism, but I also get to just completely lean into this passion of running. And through that, I assumed I would be able to find sponsors that would help me along the way and help me to, you know, pay bills and do all that thing. I think I was a little, in my naivety, felt that part was going to be a little bit easier than it was. That was probably the biggest challenge of running across the United States, was finding those that wanted to support me along the way.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's, I mean, most people would be wowed by someone driving across the country, let alone
running. Well, you know, that's funny little tidbit is by the time I got done running across the U.S., I had ran and drove because I had to drive my camper and van from my house in Denver to L.A., and then my crew drove it across the country. And then when it got to New York, I drove it back to Denver. So when I stepped foot back in Denver, I was like, oh my God, I actually did just run and drive across the United States.
first time ever. So what was the most you had ran until that point, like in consecutive days, let's say, or?
Consecutive days, you know, probably couple back-to-back 20 to 25 milers before deciding to run across the United States. Once I decided to, that year of training consisted of a lot of consistent mileage, running 10 miles every day, taking every 15th day off to begin with. And then I upped it to like 110 to 120 miles a week, still running every day. And then the third component was like the last like third of the year, I did back-to-back like 50 mile to 100K races every 2 weeks. So I was really trying to pack in the mileage. For me, it wasn't as much about, well, the consistency was there. And then the biggest thing I wanted to do was normalize like that 50-mile mark, getting to where I knew at any moment somebody could say, hey, man, get off the couch. You need to go run 50 miles, and I could do it. And I definitely think by the time I got ready to run across the U.S., that was where I was at. Like, I knew I could do that at any time. Mm.
So who came up with that plan? Was it made by you, or did you have like guidance?
No, I'm a really like, I don't even know the word to use. Let's just say like a primitive runner. I just kind of like go by feel. And I came up with that on my own. It was just like a very easy, I could easily rationalize it. It made sense. I didn't want to get in the weeds too much about my metrics or anything. I just wanted, I was really inspired by the Tarahumara Indians. And what I loved about their culture and those runners is it's that ability to run sustainably, to run, they can run long, long distances and get up and do it again the next day. So I knew that was possible. And I really wanted to explore that myself. Just kept it really basic. Mm.
Yeah. I don't know where to go with it now. Like what would you say is like the harder part, is the physically running or finding the right formula for recovery so that you can do it again?
So that's an interesting, very interesting part. That's a big part of what I'm exploring now as well. Since then, I really didn't account for recovery like I should. You know, my assumption was, okay, you're going to go run all day long and then you're going to be really tired. So you'll just pass out. And then the next day you just get up and do it again. You'll be rested. And the reality was, is it just didn't play out like that. I found sleep really hard, especially in the very beginning of the run. I think in the first week, cumulatively, my crew and I, we think I slept about 10 hours total. It was just absolutely no sleep. My glutes were just pounding, just so much pain throughout my legs. And that was keeping me up, wasn't able to sleep, therefore I wasn't able to recover. So yeah, recovery was not something focused on. We figured that out on the run, like literally. And then it became about elevating during the day as much as possible. Massage, we had a Theragun, and just like really trying to break up the fascia, keep my legs going, icing my shins when I would come in, especially when they were bothering me early on. And then for sleep, I settled into like a routine of CBD oil, a couple ibuprofen, turmeric, and ginger, like pills. And then every night I would have one or two beers when I finished. And that was just to kind of help calm my body down so that I could sleep throughout the night. And then so still exploring that more. That's something that's like a big passion of mine now, is recovery. In fact, my upcoming sponsor for this summer's efforts and onward is a company called Nucom. And they focus on bringing your brain into kind of theta waves through binaural beats. So you wear like headphones and a little patch of GABA on your wrist and an eye mask, and you lay down. And this kind of tricks your mind into going into kind of a meditative state. And you can stay there for upwards of an hour and a half. And for every 30 minutes you're in it, it's the equivalent of 3 hours of REM sleep in recovery. So like that's a lot of the focus going into efforts in the future, is how can I use this as a tool to increase my recovery time and just become more efficient as an athlete through this technology.
Wow, that's really cool. That's really, really cool.
I didn't even, it's really exciting. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It was something I was turned on to right when I finished my run across the United States. I was invited to go to this recovery gym called Recovery NYC by a fellow plant-based athlete, John Joseph. And he took me in there, and they put me in this thing called Nucom for about 2 hours. And when I came out, it was the first time I had felt normal in 3 months. And that was just a profound like realization, is that like this thing really had some potency to it. So I'm excited to work with those guys.
Hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. That's why not try it, right? Like that's what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly.
So what were the greatest, I'd say, lessons that you took away from that, that whole experience?
The run across the United States, there was a lot that came out of it for me. One was just like as an individual, like internally, it gave me a lot of confidence. It made me realize that I was really capable of anything. You know, growing up, my mom always instilled in me the mantra, you can do anything you set your mind to. And I really proved that through this to myself. So that was a big thing. I definitely found that, for one, the country's huge. Jeez, you really figure that out once you start running across it. Just that the plant-based diet really worked. You know, like I was pretty new to being a fully plant-based athlete when I took on the run. I knew it was something that worked for me. I knew it was something I was very passionate about. But putting my feet on the pavement for so many days in a row, did I realize that it wasn't something I could do and still succeed as a runner? It was the reason I was able to succeed. So instead of it just being like a choice for the environment that made me feel pretty good, it was like, no, this is the reason I can get up every day and do this. So knowing that and feeling like 110% confident in my convictions of that was definitely something big that came out of the other side. Also, just that people are beautiful. You know, along the way, you can't escape meeting tons of people as you run across the United States. There's just going to be people coming out of the woodworks to see what you're doing. And what I found was everyone was fascinating. They all had a really interesting story to tell and were really interested in what I was doing. So yeah, I came away just feeling really positive.
And did you accomplish what you had set out to? Like, not just running across America, but in your messaging for food choices and educating people, did you feel like, I know that's maybe hard to quantify, but
yeah, I think it's hard to quantify, but I do feel as though I did have an impact. Absolutely. Whether it be people that I met in person along the way, like, you know, I assumed I'd get a lot of pushback, especially through rural America. But what I found is there really wasn't any pushback. People are aware that a lot of communities are really unhealthy, and they're starting to connect the dots that goes back to food. So I would come in, I would meet someone at a stop, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm a plant-based runner. I'm doing this to create conversations about better food choices, promote this plant-based diet. And everyone would be like, yeah, you know, they would at least say, you know, either, oh, I should try that. Or it could be as little as, I know I need to make some changes, or I know those in my family or around me need to. So I felt like people were very receptive to it. Definitely know that there's a lot of people who definitely significantly changed their food choices through my efforts. And then that also applies to social media. You know, that was another really, that's one of the blessings of social media, right? Is like, if we put something positive out, a lot of people can gravitate and catch on to it. So yes, I think I did make an impact and still do. And now what I love about it is it's just like a matter of fact part of who I am. So as I take on other efforts, it's just so quickly people make the connection and it just furthers the argument that it's just something that is viable for us as athletes.
Mm. And they see you two proving once again that it does work, and there's more and more plant-based athletes that are coming out there that we're finding out about. And I also read Scott Jurek's book, and it's just amazing what he was able to do, you know?
Yeah, it really is. And I think with like each passing day, you just see more and more. You find out about more people. You know, when I ran across the U.S., I was not the first plant-based person to do it. Actually, Patrick Sweeney, the guy who I mentioned, who I met, who had done it, he was vegan. I think I was the first person to lean into it and like really make that what I wanted to talk about while I was doing this. Because most people, when you run across the United States, they create a platform of some sort because people are going to pay attention. So yeah, me making mine about these food choices. But then, even since then, there was a guy who was a month behind me, Cam Williams. He took 90 days to do it. And him and I have become friends since finishing to find out he was predominantly plant-based the whole time. Mm-hmm. There's a guy right now named Hella. His Instagram handle is HellaGood9. He's running across the United States. Him and I are very good friends. I've been helping him along the way. He's 100% vegan as well. So yeah, I think especially in the running world, it's catching on and people are realizing that it's to their benefit.
I saw you post something for Hella, and I checked his page out, and it's awesome that he's doing it. You know, he looks like he's having a lot of fun. Even a guy that I got to interview, and he's been on the show, Hedy, he was asking me about, you know, maybe doing that. And I'm like, he's asking me for advice, and the most I've done is like a 65K in the trail race, but I'm more of a marathoner.
He should definitely do it.
But I'm like, dude, just reach out to the guys who have done it if you have questions. So I'm excited that we're getting to have this chat, because hopefully he'll be able to listen to it and get some pointers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I have a couple more questions regarding that. But like, so if anybody, do people reach out to you about doing this, asking for advice, and what advice could you give them?
Yeah, definitely. I've mentored a couple people through Big Efforts. A good friend, William Googe, he ran the length of the UK, and that was about 3 months after I finished my run. So I actually went over there and helped him with that. That was a really profound experience for me, getting to be on the crew side of things. And then also now I'm helping Hella as he goes. And my advice kind of starting off is just like, you really have to check your ego and stuff like this at the door. Just like, know that it's going to be a slog, and like you're going to have good days and you're going to have bad days. But one thing I really learned out there is any day doesn't equate to what the next day is going to be like. You can have the worst day of your life and wake up the next morning and feel great, and vice versa is true. Like, so you just got to take it day by day, step by step, and don't get overwhelmed by the bigger goal at hand. Just chop it up into little parts, and eventually those little things add up to something bigger. And I think that also stands true for any change we're trying to make in life. You know, you can apply that same kind of ethic.
Can you, in those 75 days, can you like reference a marathon and say like, at this point, you know, is it the same kind of mentality? Like, oh, I'm halfway there, or I'm at mile, 24. I don't know. Like,
yeah, no. No, and you know, like when I say that with such conviction, I was actually just talking about this to somebody the other day, is I kind of assumed it would be that way, right? Like I'd get into like the last 70, I did it over 75 days. So the thought I thought was like, well, you get to like where you only got 2 weeks left, you're going to be like, oh, this is nothing. I got it. Not at all. Like I remember like on day 18, my sister-in-law to be was out with me, and she's like, aren't you excited? You only have 18 days. And I was like, Jamie, if I told you I was going to go run a race that was 45 miles a day for 18 days, that would be crazy. She's like, yeah. I was like, so no, it's still crazy. Like until the last 2 days that I feel like it was like there was some reprieve from the task at hand, because it's just so massive, like so many miles. I hoped it would work like that, but it didn't really feel that way.
Was there ever a moment where you said like, this isn't going to happen?
There was some fears at one point. I contracted shin splints in my left leg on day 7. And as soon as I felt it, I got real scared. I was like, oh, wow, this could be something that could really stop me. Luckily, I was able to overcome it over about a 5-day period by just adjusting things. It was painful, but I switched the shoes I was wearing. I changed into ankle socks instead of crew socks, so my ankle had more mobility, and I started wearing a compression leave on my shin, and I was able to overcome it. So that was pretty scary. And then on day – I ended up having to take day 20 off. It was the one day I didn't run, and it was because I had really bad tendonitis in the other leg to the point that I was afraid. I was afraid that I just physically could not continue. But luckily, again, with that one-day rest and – making some adjustments, I was able to continue. As far as just saying like, I want to give up, I'm not into this, there really wasn't a moment of that. I really, before I started, set my mind to the thing of like, this was an absolute. Like there was no doubt I was not going to finish this unless I broke something or my body just completely wouldn't allow me to continue.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Any mantras that you have that kind of like push you through the middle of a 43 mile day?
I think it mantras, I think like, you know, really more just about accountability to myself and to the community for which I had told I was going to do this to. Going back to this idea of like, you know, social media has a lot of negative things, but there are some positives. One is you can put out a positive message and people will gravitate towards it. And another one is like, I told the whole world, my little world, you know, the people that knew me, that I was setting out to do this. And so in that, I was trapped in my accountability to it. Like I was trapped in my intentions. I said I was going to do it. So I really wanted to finish it. I really wasn't willing to sacrifice my word for just because I felt kind of unpleasant at any given time. So really, yeah, just that and just keeping the goals really small. Like some days I would be struggling and my crew and I, they would stop every 5 miles for me to eat a little bit and drink some more water or fluids. And in that time, a lot of times I'd have to break it up and just be like, all you got to do is make it five more miles. So that was kind of how I broke it up.
And so when you say you and your crew, how many people stopped their lives to jump on this journey with you?
So I had one full-time crew member. His name was Elliot. Elliot is someone whom I met 2 weeks before starting the run down in Mexico. Wow. We had gone back down there for that race, the Caballo Blanco, for like a last minute, like inspiration. And also I proposed down there. So I met this guy while I was down there and a short conversation started, ended up that he was plant-based. He was traveling with a backpack and was making his way up through South America, Central America, and he was in Mexico at the time. And somebody on my group of friends that were there with me goes, hey, he's running across the United States. You should come help him. And Elliot took it very seriously. He's like, I really want to. And so after this like 20-minute chance encounter, he showed up the day before I started my run and he stayed with me all 75 days.
Wow.
So yeah, that was like super cool. Such a great way to get to know someone. He's like a brother to me now. He was there for me every single day. So his, you know, him being there for consistency was just a blessing that I didn't even know how bad I needed until we got out there. Mm-hmm. And then my fiance Shelly, her parents, they're both retired and they're really awesome. They're troopers. Her dad is obsessed with running. So they came out and they were part of my crew for the first, roughly, let's say the first 25 days and then the last 25. It wasn't exactly that, but they were there for the majority of the beginning and the majority of the end. And then Shelly's sister was a plant-based nutritionist and a runner as well. And I enlisted, asked her to come on as my crew chief. So she was the one that figured out my nutrition plan. She did a lot of the organizing and keeping logistics together. And then Shelly, my fiance, she would come out when she could. She had just started her job as a nurse, but she came out quite a bit. And then some other friends and stuff were peppered in there. So always at least three people, up to six at sometimes. My mom was out for a bit. Some other buddies showed up and they crewed me for a while. But Elliot consistently stayed there to keep everything consistent so that I had could kind of depend, like I could always count on things kind of happening in a way that I knew was coming.
That's incredible.
It was super cool.
The thing that stood out to me was having a plant-based like nutritionist there with you. So did she come up with like the game plan for you in terms of like what you're going to eat when and how much? And
yes, she had a lot of really good ideas coming into it. She had actually hiked the Appalachian Trail as a vegan the year before. So she came in kind of with that knowledge. The thing that made mine a little bit easier is we had a van pulling a camper. So we had more than her. She was limited to what she could fit on her back, where we could have, you know, we had a blender so we could make smoothies and such. So yeah, she built the plan off of a high carb, high fat kind of diet, lots of calories, and wanted me to eat often. We ended up settling on about 8,000 calories a day. So I was eating 11 times a day throughout the day to consume that much.
Okay. And what kind of things are you eating? What are you using to burn that many calories?
Yeah, it was very consistent. So I kind of stuck to a very regimented meal plan. Before I started, I kind of had to eliminate that idea that I was going to really enjoy food for the next 2.5 months. It was really just going to have to become fuel. So in that, I would start off every morning with a bowl of oatmeal, and it would be with maple syrup, nuts, some peanut butter, and chia seeds, and a cup of coffee. At the first stop, I would have my first of four smoothies for the day. Each smoothie had about 1,000 calories in it. So it was made up of coconut milk, veggies, water, chia seeds. And we would put some Soylent in there to kind of round out the calories. Soylent's a meal replacer. Apparently you can sustain off the stuff. I don't know if I'd recommend it. But if it didn't really help to up the calories to get to that 1,000 calorie mark. And then in between those smoothies, I would have like cold pasta, boiled potatoes, tofu wraps, tofu, hummus, cilantro. And then at the end of the day, there's this great kind of plant-based camping meal. It's called Outdoor Herbivore. And I would do a double portion of one of those cooked down with coconut milk and then have my two beers. And then throughout the day, instead of drinking water, I stuck to Scratch, which is kind of like a hydration mix for runners, for athletes. And it also has calories. For each of my water bottles, I was getting about 60 calories.
Wow. I appreciate appreciate the disclaimer there, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it has its application and it's something that we still keep around. We actually use Huel more now, but I wouldn't recommend it as like a healthy thing. It's just in a fix or when you need to kind of, add in a little extra calories.
So was there anything you like got sick of that you still can't eat to this day or?
Nothing that I haven't been able to get back to. Early on, I was like, no more bread. I couldn't do bread. It was too dry. I just didn't enjoy it. And then hummus left pretty soon. And still, like in big efforts, like I don't want hummus anywhere around me. Like I was running, I did a last man standing race a couple of weeks ago, and my fiance tried to put some hummus in front of me. And she was even joking about it the next day. She said, I was just like, not in this application. I do not want that around me. Like, just get the hummus away. But I'd eat some right now, but I'm not, for running a lot. So,
yeah, you'd eat some watching TV, but not in.
Yeah, exactly. Not while running.
So if I go back to the people that were watching you do this or as you ran across, like what are some of the questions that, well, did you have time to like speak to people yourself? Because you were doing the act of, running. So. but my question is like, what do people ask you most about in terms, like, I know what kind of questions I get, all the time from people, like, where do you get your protein? And that's probably the number one question you get, but, what kind of questions did you get and how did you educate them?
Yeah, definitely got the protein question a lot. I think we have a culture that is obsessed with protein and I'm not really sure why. It shows up, it's there. If you eat a whole food plant-based diet, you get all the protein you need. But yeah, that was a big question people ask. A lot of just like, what do you eat? We tried to show people a lot. Why, what are your reasons? Are you hungry all the time? Do you miss out on things you used to like to eat? Questions like that. And then more running specific things, or a lot of questions about heart rate, people wanting to know if I was really focusing on my heart rate, how, if I was staying in zone 2 purposely, things of that nature. And then as far as like what I was able to answer in my capacity, people I met in person, obviously I would chat with, it was usually at stops in between my 5 mile segments, where people would come out and actually run with me for a segment. We could chat then. And then with social media, I would do updates every day. I did 2 to 3 a day where I would just start off the morning, tell people how I was feeling, try to do one midday and then again in the evening. And I was very transparent with that. I wanted to be very honest. I wanted people to, and I don't think I had the capacity to not be honest. Like I was pretty tired. So there was no way to put on a face. It was just like, this is what you get. This is who I am. and through that, I think through showing that struggle, was I able to inspire more people. As much as I got like people that were inspired to change their food choices, I also found that there were a lot of people who were just really like inspired to do better. That like, whether it was that they had something in their life that they felt like was holding them back from going out for a run every day, and they were making excuses. And while watching me get up every day and not make excuses, it made them more inclined to do the same. So there was a lot there. I felt like I was able to inspire people in a lot of different ways, and they also inspired me. It often is what kept me going, was just knowing that a lot of people were plugging in and paying attention, and I wanted to be accountable to them as well.
Mm. Yeah. It's like, yeah, as you go through, I'm sure that's the fun part, is making connections along the way and getting, support from the local community that you're in that day. Even when you're trying to do, it's almost like a distraction, I guess, if you will, to kind of keep you going. What can you say about the ultra community? And is this like, are these types of like expeditions, if you will, like different, or do you kind of all connect still with any kind of like distance, like let's say over 100 miles?
Ultra community in general, I just love, like, it's just a bunch of people that like do really rad stuff, but don't seem to take themselves too seriously. I find most people are very just kind and amazing. as far as like for me, distance wise, like I enjoy these like larger, bigger goals that require me to find like a way to run sustainably. I think like obviously the best example of that being the Transcon. Hoping to do more things like that in the future. But prior to the run across the US, I was really focused on 50 miles. This past year, I've done a couple 100-mile efforts, including my FKT, my record at Central Park. I enjoy running. I like long distance. I like formats for which I can get up and do it again the next day too.
Yeah. So like these, this stage type races?
Well, I went to do a stage race in Peru and unfortunately got like a really bad fever on the first day and ended up getting evacuated out of the desert.
Oh, geez.
It was quite a wild experience. It was in the Ica Desert in Peru. And, I was with Cam Williams, the guy who I mentioned earlier, who ran across the United States a month behind me. And they took me into the med tent. They realized I had a 108 degree Fahrenheit temperature, which is just like really, really high. And I can't remember what it equated to in Celsius. But in that, they like packed my chest with ice and they decided to just get me out of there. So we made it to a hotel in a small town on the coast of Peru. I started to feel a lot better really quickly. And in fact, within 2 days, I felt 110% better. And we decided to run up the Pan American Highway. So we ended up doing like 35 to 45 miles a day for 3 days until we made it back to Lima to catch our flight home. We had a lot of fun doing that. We felt really comfortable on the shoulder of the road together since it was something we had both done to such an extent the year before. That was kind of a rambling thing to answer. I've only tried one stage race. I'd like to give that another go. This summer, my plans are to be doing like multi-day efforts throughout the summer in the Rockies here in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Have you tried the Leadville 100 yet?
So I have done the 50. I did the 50 the year before my Transcon. I attempted to do it 3 weeks after finishing my Transcon and my legs were just not ready. So I dropped out halfway through. I am going to be doing the Leadville 100 this summer. Hopefully going to be doing maybe the marathon and the 50 as well, but the 100 is for sure. It's on the calendar.
I hear that's a grueling one.
I've definitely paced other friends out there in it and I've been on the course a bit and it's a really challenging race. I think what is the most challenging is you're always above 10,000 feet. So it's just a high altitude race. So you just find that when you're going up what would normally be a small hill that you would normally run, you're just completely gassed and you have to really focus on your breathing and making sure that, you don't just kind of fall apart because of the high elevation.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the Central Park run for most consecutive loops. Like, how'd you come up with that? And, you know, what inspired you to do that?
Yeah, so I did that with 10,000, a clothing brand that was kind of founded and is out of New York City. And together, like, we connected and I just wanted to do something meaningful, something big. And the idea of going back to Central Park was really interesting to me. It was where I'd finished my run across the United States. And New York has always just kind of been this place that shows up in my life at like big junctures in life. New things are starting, old things are kind of going away. And I felt like, you know, here in the States, we were kind of at a place where felt like COVID was calming down enough that I felt comfortable to travel. I knew I'd be outside for the whole effort. So that felt safe. And it just felt like a good time to give it a go. Kind of a thing of coming out of COVID, just kind of saying hello to the world again and setting my sights on big efforts. And then when we started to look around, it was like, wow, okay, this is an established thing. And I just got my eyes set on it. It was something I definitely wanted to give a go.
So the previous record was what? Was it 12 loops?
11. It was 11 loops. Yeah. So it was like 70 miles, I think.
Okay. And so your goal was to set out and break the record then that's what you were going for?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I knew where the mark was and what I needed to beat. And so I just set out that morning.
You have to start 5 minutes after the park opened, which is 6:05, and I had until 12:55 p.m. So essentially 18 hours and 50 minutes to get as many loops in as I could. So I surpassed his record, the past record, kind of early in the evening, and realized I still had a good bit of time. So we went ahead and pressed, and I got 16 loops. So I finished at 98, I think about 98 and a half miles in 18 hours and 7 minutes.
Wow. Okay. So you have one of these major events that you've done, 75 days, the climate's constantly changing, the scenery is changing, and then you got this thing, which is one day, but you're running in circles pretty much. Is that challenging for you, or is it just this ultra mentality that you have that's just like one foot in front of the other and let's get this done?
You know, I think like what made it a little bit easier was the year of COVID, right? Like I found myself just aimlessly running a lot, where I would either set out in the morning, not knowing how far I was going to go, where I was going to go, and just kind of aimlessly toll around. And then I did do that 24-hour effort where the only goal was to keep moving for 24 hours. So I was kind of like used to this like non-structured thing. That actually then getting to Central Park, it actually provided some structure. It's a good size loop too. Being 6.1 miles is like the perfect distance to where you get out there, you get going, and then by the time you're like start to suffer and kind of get lonely, you know you're going to be back around to where your crew's at. Because I had a crew set up at right at Tavern on the Greens, which is where I finished my run across the U.S. So it had its moments where maybe the repetition got like wore on me a little bit, but you're on Central Park, so you're just seeing people. There's just so many people, and they're all so interesting. I was pretty entertained the whole time.
Okay, so did people do the same kind of thing where they stop, maybe run with you a little bit, or were you kind of on your own?
I had with my fiance Shelly. She ran, I think, 3 laps with me cumulatively. Some people from the 10,000 crew ran a little bit with me. So yeah, there were people that joined me at times. I'd say I still did the majority of the loops by myself. And then near the end of the evening, some good friends of ours showed up and they rounded out the last 2 loops with me to keep me company. It was just a great event. You know, I stayed motivated the whole time. I think being there with 10,000, they did a short film about it. So having a film crew with you kind of keeps you motivated. There's always somebody watching. So it increases your accountability quite a bit.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was it was really well done. You know, it was fun to watch, and it's cool to have that as like a memento as well. So it did for as far as nutrition goes, you had like your a table set up, or how did that?
We tried to have a table set up, and then the parks department decided that we were trying to sell stuff off the table, so they just took it down. So we just kind of, they had everything there for me. Difference kind of between that and the TransCon nutrition wise being on the TransCon, you know, 75 days. So you have to make sure that you're just like eating really healthy, because you've got to be able to replenish and keep the nutrients up, because you got to do it again the next day. With this big like 24-hour effort, it's a little less focused on that. I mean, I think for the day I became more closer to a junk food vegan, you know, not completely. I still tried to get some good stuff in, but like, I'm a fan of Pringles and such efforts, and I ate like a whole tube or two of originals. But we can keep the sugars up. Yeah,
we can forgive you for that. So when's the book coming out, Robbie?
Oh wow, that's probably more challenging than running. Maybe I'll run across the U.S. again before I do that. It's something I definitely have thought about some. I get encouraged to do it a bit, but I'm not quite there yet. I'm gonna put a couple more big efforts like on my resume, and then maybe sit down and do it.
Nice. So where do you stand on the climate change efforts and spreading awareness on that and making change?
I mean, for me, I do it through my plant-based message. That's to me, I feel very confidently that we as individuals, one of the biggest things we can do to help mitigate climate change is to adopt a plant-based diet. It's something we do 3 times a day. Eating is, and with every choice we make, it's better for the environment. And that's still kind of where I put my focus. As far as like on the bigger scale, I think things are looking up. I mean, they're looking better than they ever have. We've still got a long ways to go, and there's no certainty that we're going to overcome the challenges in front of us, but I feel good. I feel confident that we'll get there. I think with every day we see new things that are happening, whether it be, you know, I think I just saw yesterday, what, 11 Madison Park, a big restaurant in New York City, famous fine dining restaurant, has just decided it's going to go completely plant-based. So the tides are turning in that kind of area. And then, you know, if we can just keep plugging away at all the other aspects, hopefully we'll get there.
Yeah, I saw that too, actually. That's huge news. I think it was popped up on my feed as well. So I thought that was interesting. And I think more and more restaurants are doing that too, you know, like just for their own, you know, for sustainability. It's important, and they're seeing the value in it too. And as the culture shifts a little bit, like, you still have that meat eater mentality for a lot of people. Like, I mean, a lot of people I speak to just have no idea like what I'm doing or how I survive, pretty much.
Yeah. And,
it's just about like educating and, you know, making small changes. I think what's your messaging like to people who want to make a change?
Just in what you said, small changes. Like, it's really just about like, better is better. For every meal that you change in a positive direction is better than you did the day before. And small little goals add up to big things. In the same way it was for me to run across the United States, I had to do it in small chunks. I think the same to be true for changing your food choices. Again, it's something that we are very, you know, our food choices are very personal. They go back to childhood. This is something that is ingrained in us. And so to change that, I think it's a pretty scary message to tell people they need to do it overnight. You're just setting people up for failure. Where if you just say, hey, here are the facts, here are some things you should try, slowly start making some changes. And if people really want it, then they're going to end up, you know, fully embracing that over time, or they don't, and they're just doing better than they were before. Mm. And I think that's all we can ask.
I think too, the daunting thing, because, you know, you've said, you know, people know what they need to do, but it's hard to do it sometimes. What did you find a challenge with meal prep and cooking, and like, what are some things you've learned with regards to food itself?
I think I had it pretty easy as far as making the switch, because we had just moved to a new city and I was finally out of the restaurant scene and I didn't have a lot of friends. So we were just eating at home a lot. So it really allowed us to explore that without any barriers. I think what I've found over time is just like, don't overcomplicate it. Like, it's just eat things that are healthy. We know it's healthy. You can look at a plate, you can tell what things are healthy and what not. If there's a Twinkie on that plate, it's not good. It's overprocessed. Anything that's overprocessed, just try to stay away from it. And eat a lot of fresh veggies, whole grains. You know, we do tons of rice and beans at our house. And yeah, just don't keep it simple. Or if you do want to get it more complex and create, and, you know, you're wondering like, how am I going to give up things? There's a recipe for everything. Like, everybody always asks me, oh, what are recipes? I want to try it. It's like, whatever you like to eat, just Google vegan in front of it. Like, there is a recipe that'll get you there. Like, and so, yeah, just enjoy the process and don't beat yourself up if it's something that, you know, you can't pull off overnight, or, you know, just try to make better choices along the way.
Yeah, because you get some people who want to like replace, like eat plant-based, but then replace meat, you know, so they have, like you said, they have food like that. But then, you know, sometimes it's taste, sometimes it's texture. So it depends. But like, you're right, when you do search, like, I have my favorite pancake recipe that I use, and they're pretty awesome with like bananas. And it's like they taste just as good. And yeah, like, I love that. What's your favorite? What's your like go-to?
Go-to meal right now. Again, we go back to rice and beans a lot. We have this thing we call, there's a plant-based restaurant in Austin that has a meal called the Slacker's Banquet. And it's rice and beans, like cherry tomatoes cut up, pickled jalapenos chopped up, onion, cilantro, and a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper. And it's just like a big heaping bowl of it. And I eat that probably a couple nights a week. Like, I just love rice and beans.
Oh yeah, me too. I went to Costa Rica maybe 4 years ago now. I don't know. I forget what year it is. But it was like, it's like the perfect diet for me. I just walk around rice and beans and veg, and like, and it's so simple and so easy, and it gives you a fuel for the day. So that's great. So having seen, you know, you've traveled across the US now and ran across it. Where's your favorite place to run?
I really enjoy running up here in the mountains of Colorado. It's definitely, yeah, it's definitely my place that just feels, my best, just my most present. I love it. As COVID kind of was creating all the complications last year for anyone to do much of anything, we found that we could still socially distance and do our thing up in the mountains. So we found a lot of solace in that. And yeah, just looking forward to doing more of that this year.
So would you say you're more of a trail guy or road guy?
I think at heart, I'm more of a trail guy. I think by circumstance of living in Denver in the city, I end up running on the road more often than not. And then running across the U.S. was obviously on the road. My focus, I think, coming into this next year is to really hone in on the trail. And we're also going to be moving into the mountains a little later this year. So that will hopefully help to do that more so as well.
Okay. Is Jerick from Colorado himself?
He's not from here, but he lives up in Boulder. So yeah. He lives, yeah, just a little bit further north up from where I do.
Okay. And have you ever met him or have you?
I met him in passing at a race in Montana a couple years ago. But we're not buddies.
So anybody that you're following that you look up to in the sport?
I a lot of people, I get inspired by other people's efforts and things they're doing. I think kind of like one of the people that I just like the way that he's went about his exploration of endurance. And as he's kind of stepping out of it, seems to be a little bit Rich Roll, definitely someone he's kind of a friend, mentor, someone that I definitely look up to. But yeah, there's just every day. I mean, that's one of the beauties again, social media is you can be inspired. If you follow the right people, there's no lack of inspiration from the things that other people are doing. But specifically, I just love the community as a whole, really. That's probably the better answer.
Yeah. And you've been on Rich Roll's podcast too, which like I'm always honored to, if I have a guest that's been on his show, I know it's a kind of a big deal. So I'm a big fan as well. So that's,
yeah, he's just so eloquently done what he's done, right? And I just appreciate that. Yeah, and there's just a host of heaps of other people I could mention, but in all, just it's a great community
for sure. You've done work for Souls for Souls as well?
No, I haven't. Hella, who's running across the U.S. right now, he is. So okay. I've been trying to help promote what he's doing.
Okay, gotcha.
If you go to my social media, it's the link goes to his Soul for Souls thing.
Okay, great. Okay, perfect. So do you know what they're about and what they do? Or
from my understanding through Hella is they provide shoes to those that need it and other support as well, especially in developing countries. Hella's from Mali. So in his younger years, he didn't have shoes or they were hard to come by. So it's something that he is very passionate about. And to me, doesn't seem to be much more admirable thing than to get shoes on people's feet. That's kind of my understanding of it.
I know there's a few organizations that do that too. There's another one that helps the homeless get into running and stuff like that. So there's all kinds of great organizations, but anytime you can help other people, that's great. I know earlier on in the conversation we spoke about, you know, what it means to be like a professional or to do running as a profession. So what does that look like for you in your life now? Just kind of give us a day in the life of a pro runner.
Yeah. So for me, like right now it is very new. I'm like a couple days into it, to be honest. This is just kind of kicking off again for me, but it allows the time to focus on long efforts. So just normalizing long distances again, ramping it up this week. I got in 15 miles this morning. Tomorrow I'm going to try to head to a trail and get in at least another 15. So consistent mileage, taking care of myself, eating really well, also focusing on recovery again. I'm really exploring this new technology again, NuCalm, and how I can apply it to these larger efforts. And then it's just trying to, you know, devise ways in which to turn heads and do things that that fuel my passions and keep the conversation going about better food choices and also the importance of recovery and how we all need to take care of ourselves. The more we take care of ourselves, we can be there and be present and available to those we love and inspire others. And through everybody doing that, we increase the frequency of the earth and maybe it gets a little bit better.
Can you touch on some maybe tips in recovery or what you talk to people about when it comes to that?
on the recovery side, it's still very much I'm in exploration mode of that. I'm finding that quality sleep goes a long ways. Staying away from caffeine outside of my early cup in the morning, eating well, eating clean, especially in the evenings. And then, you know, finding whatever it is that helps to calm you down and gives you even I'm really into a midday routine of finding a way to take 30 minutes to an hour to rest, recover after my big efforts, and then take on life for the rest of the day, what it means to just be a partner and, you know, do all the other things that has to happen outside of my running. And right now I am finding that through NuCalm. It's a really interesting technology. I definitely recommend people to check it out. It's NuCalm.com, NuCalm. And it helps to kind of just create that routine, bring your mind to a place to where it allows your body to start recovering. That's just my kind of ramble on recovery right now.
Okay, awesome. Are you still making your own training plans? Or do you have a coach?
It's still pretty broad. Yeah, I just kind of get up and run. I just get up, see how I feel that day, put in some miles. I think about it a little bit, like the day before. I wanted to do a little more than my average 10 miles. My hope was I was going to make it to some trails, but it rained a lot yesterday, so I did it on the road. So I'm not very structured. Yeah, I wish I was. Probably should kind of think about that. Maybe get a little more structured.
No, I just find it fascinating. You're able to take on these amazing feats, you know, and put it together on your own. Like I have a coach for, you know, whatever I'm trying to accomplish, but it sounds like you go a lot on feel and how you feel that day. And I think there's something we can learn from that. I think that that's really important in, you know, cause so much of it for a lot of people is it comes down to like numbers and distance and time. And when you're like, you have a very, like a more broad approach to it. And I think that's also very good. You know, it might be even be healthier mentally.
I think, yeah. And it fits my personality. Like I'm not type A, I'm the opposite. And like, if it did become too much about numbers and metrics, I would probably lose interest. To me, it would start feeling like work where right now I get up and I go run and it's like, I'm doing the best thing I can do for me in that moment. Like it's when I run, as I'm sure many people listening to this who run feel, is the minute you get out there, you feel the best you ever feel. And it's like I kick this like primal thing in my DNA just kicks in. And I don't want to complicate that. I don't want to tarnish that. So I just try to keep it simple. There may become a day, you know, maybe after the summer sometime soon where I'll focus on speed. I'm not a very good racer, you know, like I'm not someone that finds myself on many podiums, but I just enjoy being out there in the longer efforts. And that's where I usually get my notorieties from, longer stuff.
Yeah. That's, which is remarkable. It's really awesome that you have that approach. And, like I said, I think a lot of people can learn from that. What's the best advice that someone's ever given you?
I mentioned it earlier. I go back to this mantra my mom said in my head from a very young age, and it's, you can do anything you set your mind to. Just really understanding that there are no limits. There's only possibilities. And it's a matter of just committing to something wholeheartedly. And if you can see it through, then most likely you're going to get to that goal. Just don't get so caught up in the details, because you have to just start putting one foot in front of the other and you will have to address things as they come. And if you get too caught up in the details before you start, you may never start. So yeah, I guess that would be it.
That's great. When do you think, what do you think your next, or do you already know what your next adventure is going to be?
This summer, the focusing in Colorado, I really want to put my like endurance to the test, up in the mountains, high altitude. So I think if people follow along, you'll see this summer I'll be competing in, you know, the Leadville 100. I'm also going to run the Colorado Trail, which is a 500 mile trail across Colorado. And then I'm also going to summit all the 14ers. So there's 58 14ers in the state of Colorado. That's peaks over 14,000 feet. My goal is to complete all of those in one summer, just kind of wrapping up all these big efforts that people come to Colorado for. And just explore what that means and how to accomplish that, and really focusing on my meal plan, eating really well, and then also the recovery side of things.
Thanks for explaining the 14ers thing. I know it's something that maybe our ultra audience will get, but I was going to ask you what that was.
Yeah. I kind of forget that sometimes. Living here in Colorado, it becomes like just part of, you know, everyday talk. But yeah, it's really cool. It's one of the beautiful things about Colorado is there's just these beautiful, massive peaks, and there's a lot of them. And it's often people's goal to do them throughout the course of their life, or it might be in one summer. Which is what I'm going to do, is try to do them all in one summer. So yeah,
okay.
It ranges between 55 and 58, depending on who you're talking to.
Nice. I hope they get out to Colorado one day and get to see and run some beautiful trails out there.
Oh, absolutely. Well, please hit me up when you do.
Yeah, no, for sure. I love that. What do you do when you're not running?
When I'm not running, I really like to cook. I'm definitely like cook a lot of the meals around our house. Hang out with friends and family. And, you know, in the past year and a half, I was focused a lot on working for the company I was working for, Let Us Grow. So I'm kind of at a place right now where I'm going to have the space to explore that again. Because when you do run a lot and you're working a full-time job, that becomes that other thing you do. Whereas right now, I'm hoping to pick up some more books, read a little more than I got to in the last year, and just enjoy the summer that's approaching and being outside as much as possible.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan to me. What's your greatest accomplishment to date?
I think running across the United States. I think that one still stands as probably what I'm the most proud of. It really took so much of me stepping outside of my comfort zone to make it even happen, and then getting out there and putting foot to pavement, meeting my goal. I said I was going to do it 75 days before I started, and that was definitely stretching it out and putting a challenge in front of myself. So yeah, that definitely is my most proud accomplishment.
Amazing. I just got a few more for you if you have the time.
Yeah, let's do it.
What has running taught you?
Running's taught me the importance of being healthy, of taking care of myself and finding balance in life. I think that's a lot of it for me. I came from a place prior to running where I was burning the candle pretty hard. And I'm not by no means sober, but I definitely am someone now that I think lives a more balanced life where I can, with, you know, in good health, like enjoy many aspects of life. So yeah, probably balance.
Okay. So you mean like you're talking more of a, you had like more of a party?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was just like really, yeah, late nights, just lots of partying. And now, you know, I can casually have a glass of wine or a beer, and it's just more balanced. And my life feels like sustainable on all aspects.
Would you say that like that was because of like a surrounding or a certain group of friends or just the time in your life, or?
I think I was drawn to it. I enjoyed it. I think it really went back to just found myself working in that scene, the bar scene. And so it was something that when you work in restaurants and bars and you're in a cool city, all of a sudden, like you just know everybody that works in the next bar over and you're just all hanging out. And what you know and do is drink.
Yeah. It's like the environment that you're in kind of thing.
Yeah, totally.
And now it's like, I can't do that because I have to run tomorrow morning.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What does running mean to you?
Running means like freedom. It's really a place where I feel the most free and I feel the most like myself. I feel the most whole. It's where, yeah, it kicks in, where something that's just embedded in our DNA tells me that I should run.
Incredible. Are you doing any speaking or anything like that, Robbie?
This past year, you know, obviously those type of things slowed down a bit, but I do podcasts where I can, speaking with great people such as yourself. No public events really lined up anytime soon, but I'm always open to it.
Yeah, for sure. I hope so for you. I mean, it's been great to have you, and it's, you know, you have a lot of life experience and you've done some pretty incredible things. So I'm happy we get to share this. Where can people find out more about you?
I'm most active on Instagram. If you just, it's my name. It's Robbie Ballinger, Robbie Ballinger.
Also, I have my website that is currently not, it's in shambles, but I'm working on getting it back together. And as the summer approaches and these larger efforts in Colorado happen, you can find more information on what I'm up to there. And it's just my name, robbiebatlinger.com.
Wonderful. So hopefully people can reach out, check what you're up to. And listen, I wish you all the best. And again, thank you for taking the time with me and sharing your run experience and your run journey. And hopefully we can connect sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great to chat with you.
Thanks, Robbie. Take care.
You as well.
Okay. This episode is brought to you by the WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. But seeing as we can't do that in person right now, let's try our best to stay connected through social media. How can you do that? Every Monday, we'll connect through a virtual run. You can go out there at any time of the day and run any distance you choose. When you get home, share your run with us on Instagram by tagging at WRGRuns, and we'll post it in our stories for everyone to see. It's a tough time for everyone, so hopefully this helps us stay motivated to get out there and keep moving. If you want to learn more, visit our website, imarunner.ca, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Hope to see you all soon. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.